Okay, please take your seats. We're going to get started on our next proposition. And I hope that that we can increase the number of votes this time. I feel like I'm campaigning. Our next proposition is that China is an illiberal state seeking to reshape the international system in its own image. So I hope that you all will enter your votes, whether you support this proposition or whether you oppose it. And while you are voting, I'm going to give a brief introduction of the proposition and our speakers. At the 19th Party Congress in October 2017, Xi Jinping declared that China's wisdom and approach to solving problems offers a new option for developing countries that want to accelerate their development while at the same time preserving their independence. In June this year, at the Foreign Affairs Work Conference, Xi Jinping encouraged China to take a leading role in reforming the global governance system. Yet China's advocacy for sovereignty-led regimes that restrict individual freedom in areas such as internet governance and human rights had generated considerable pushback from the international community. So the question before us today is China an illiberal state seeking to reshape the international system in its own image? To my right is Professor Pei Min Xin, the Tom and Margot Pritzker Professor of Government and George R. Roberts Fellow at Claremont McKenna College, and he will be arguing in favor of the proposition. Arguing against the proposition, to my left is Professor Wu Xinbo, who is Professor and Dean at the Institute of International Studies and Director of the Center for American Studies at Fudan University. And we will start with you, with Professor Pei. 15 minutes.
Okay. Thank you very much, Bonnie. Also, congratulations for a very successful debate on China. I want to preface my remarks by making a key distinction, because in the proposition, China is not really precisely defined. I want to say that we have to make a distinction between China and its ruling regime, because the interests and values of China as a nation and as a people are not identical with those of its ruling elites. And in fact, they are often in conflict. But for the sake of simplicity, in this case, when we say China here, we mean that the Chinese Communist Party and its party state it controls. So I want to deal with three sets of issues. One is China an illiberal state? Because this is an arguable point. Second is that why is an illiberal state fundamentally in conflict with the liberal system? Because we want to find the motivation. Why does a liberal state seek to reshape the international liberal system in its own image? And finally, we want to look at the record, what China has done, to see whether the proposition stands. I would say that there's sufficient evidence to convince us that China is indeed an illiberal state, even though the Chinese Communist Party would bill itself as democracy with socialist characteristics. But when you look at how China is governed, the following characteristics are self-evident. The first is that China's ruling regime is above the law, to the extent that liberalism is defined by the rule of law, which in its essence constrains the power of the state. That in this case, the Chinese state is not subject to any law, including its constitution. There is one anecdote I recently saw. It's official document. The Supreme People's Court has this opinion, which is equivalent to the Supreme Court's here's the opinion, which says you cannot rule according to the Chinese constitution. So lower courts in China cannot render judgments on the basis of China's constitutional principle. And this is a constitution drafted for and passed by the Chinese government itself. So this is the first point about China being an illiberal state. The second point is that the Chinese people are not really protected by a credible system of the rule of law, and their individual freedoms are constantly violated by the state itself. And the third point I want to make here is that the state itself consistently promotes ideological values that are fundamentally at odds with what we consider liberal values, nationalism, glorification of the state, personality cult of its leaders being just a few of those. And finally, the Chinese government has consistently displayed a very strong hostility toward liberal values. When you look at the list of things Chinese media is not supposed to cover, universal values, liberal democracy, human rights, civil society, the very core components of a liberal system. So I would say, unless you can show me characteristics of the Chinese state that are not in this category, then I think we can argue that China does not have an illiberal state. Now, why does an illiberal state have an abiding interest in challenging and subverting and ultimately reshaping an international system that currently is more or less liberal? There were three reasons here. Is that liberal values represented by a liberal international system in general and by the West in particular represent existential political threat to the legitimacy of the Chinese illiberal regime, because these values constantly remind the Chinese people who are ruled without consent that their government does not have popular consent. The second one is that the liberal international system itself may provide certain critical benefits for the Chinese party state, especially its open economic system. But it also constrains the Chinese party state in many, through its institutions and rules. The liberal international system, for example, is based on the idea that rules apply to everybody, every nation, regardless of its size and power or influence. But this principle counters to China's principle of international relations, which is realism, which is, in its essence, might equals right. And this you can see in recent Chinese international conduct. China also deeply, in particular, opposes or finds extremely uncomfortable with the central tenets of the liberal international system, in particular, the idea of humanitarian intervention, which contravenes China's idea of sovereignty, and the principle of universal human rights. And the third reason why the Chinese illiberal state finds the international liberal system such a bad idea is that China's, because the international liberal system is led by states that the Chinese illiberal state sees as ideological and national security threats. The Chinese government believes that these states manipulate and use the existing national system to advance their interests and to undermine China's own overriding priority. So this is, I think there's this really good incredible quote in today's Wall Street Journal. This is a great article by the title is Bring Me the Tariffs. There is this quote by Xi Jinping which I find really striking. He said, "We respect your system. Why don't you respect ours?" And I think that summarizes really the mindset in Beijing, that is, the Chinese government sees the West really as an existential political threat. So what does the record show? Here I define international system as consisting of three aspects. One is structure and institutions, is that the distribution of power in the international system and how it is organized. And second is norms and practices, the things that we regard as rules. And finally, the narratives of the international system. And if you look at all these three aspects, then and look at Chinese conduct in recent years, there's sufficient evidence to show that China has indeed undertaken enormous efforts to change the system in its own image. The first one is that China, of course, is quite pragmatic. Chinese leaders understand that a frontal attack on the international system is unwise and cannot be really carried out given its existing power. So China's strategy is to reshape the system by establishing parallel systems, by establishing components or institutions or structures that challenge, that can compete with the existing international system. And you can see the Shanghai Cooperation Organization, and also the various trade deals China is proposing. Another aspect of this effort is that when you look at those initiatives that feature China as the center, then you would find that China is carefully constructing a system with China at its core. And this system is, again, very different from the existing international liberal system in that it is not open. It is exclusive. China has control over entry. The Belt and Road Initiative, on the surface, it appears to be open because a lot of countries are invited. But when you see who is actually making the decisions, how things are done, these practices are very different, if not completely contrary, to well-established international organizations such as the World Bank. And in its external conduct, China has also shown a preference for illiberal regimes. When you look at China's support, external development aid, grants, loans, you will find that illiberal regimes such as Russia, Cuba, Cambodia, Venezuela, Thailand, North Korea, Zimbabwe, Sudan, they get the lion's share of China's foreign assistance. And that indicates a preference for illiberal regimes. And also, when you look at one more recent initiative taken by China, which has caused a great deal of consternation in Europe, that is 16 plus one. Because this, you can, well, I'm not a conspiracy theorist, but one legitimate question to ask is why does China opt to engage with 16 countries on the peripheries of Europe rather than engage with EU directly? Also in recent years, because I'm talking about shaping narratives, China has greatly intensified its effort to reshape the narrative about China, about the liberal order. I think the prevailing narrative coming out of Beijing is that its one-party state has been an unqualified success, and the liberal West is failing. So when the New York Times has this China Rules series basically repeating some of the same things, you would say China has been pretty successful. Finally, China has also Well, not finally, yeah, just two more points. When you look at another point, that is, what China has been very effective in using its commercial power, in shaping incentives, in imposing costs on companies, entities that do things that we would consider the norm, the normal things in the West, such as holding a book fair, movie festival. China, in recent years, you'll find China threatening to boycott these festivals. I think there's one, and China would demand certain authors be withdrawn from those festivals. I think the one example was the Frankfurt Book Fair 2009, the biggest in the world, and the Melbourne Film Festival was another one, and trying to censor academic journals like the China Quarterly and so forth. But finally, I think we've seen around the world, China has intensified its efforts to influence politics, perception, in the West about China. I just want to put in a plug for this special report by the Hoover Institution and Asia Society released today on Chinese influence and American interests. This is by no means an isolated case. You see similar activities in Europe, in Australia, in New Zealand. So if you put these the instances together, I think you can build a case that China is not only an illiberal state, but China has a plan. China has invested a great deal to shape the international system in its own image. What I think needs to point out that China today is not the most dominant country in the world. And at this stage, China is already doing so much. Just imagine what China would do if China were the sole superpower of the world. Thank you.
I failed to tell you all what the initial vote was, so just to tell you where we are before we started, we had 62% in support of the proposition that China's an illiberal state seeking to reshape the international system in its own image, 38% no. So you have your work cut out for you. Mm-hmm. Professor Xinvo, over to you.
Thank you, Bonnie, for your kind invitation. Good morning, everyone. I have found this very fascinating, the formula, the style of the debate. I think this is the right time for us to have a candid and honest debate on these very important issues, not only about relations between two countries, but really about the future of the international order and the role, respective role that China and the US play in it. I think the key to this proposition or counter-proposition is really two points, two things. One is how do we evaluate the current international order? Second is what about China's attitude to this order and how it may make a difference, it may, in the future. But first, let me start by examining some basic assumptions that have already been touched upon by Min Xinpei. One is that when he talked about the definition of China as an illiberal country, basically he focused on the domestic politics. But today, I think we are talking about international order, and there is always a boundary between international politics and domestic politics. The United Nations now has more than 190 member states and with different political systems. But if you look at their relations with each other, for example, the US relations with Saudi, even though both have very different political systems, actually they are quasi allies on international affairs. So that is how when you look at international relations, it do not equate it with internal politics, do not blur the boundary. So what does liberal mean in the context of international order? This current order was created after World War II, with the US taking the lead. To some extent, I think it has been the most successful international order in modern history, because this order has advocated and encouraged a set of liberal values as embodied in UN Charter, like respect for state sovereignty, non-aggression of sovereign states, peaceful resolution of disputes, openness, multilateralism, economic and security cooperation, respect for human rights, and market economics. This is how we define liberal in the context of international order. So there is both overlapping but also differences in the way you define internal politics. Now, second assumption I want to examine is usually people like to call the current order as liberal international order, which is only partially accurate. To be accurate, that is a liberal hegemonic order. On the one side, it carries a lot of liberal values in terms of what I just mentioned, politically, respect for sovereignty, equality, and multilateralism. Economically, international development and cooperation. All so on and so forth. These represent the liberal values. But on the other hand, this order has been created by the United States and has been in operation under the command and control of the US. This is actually one in which US has enjoyed power dominance, command and control of its operation, and also from time to time, US just takes exception with the international order when it finds that multilateral organizations like the United Nations wouldn't meet its needs. So this is not entirely purely a liberal order, but rather a liberal hegemonic order. And actually, there are a lot of contradictions between liberal and hegemonic features as embodied in the current international order. Now, from a Chinese perspective, how we look at the current order. I think first and foremost, China has been a major beneficiary of the current international order. On the political side, China is a member of UN Security Council, a permanent member of it. And for China, the United Nations system is an ideal artifact for it. On the one hand, all the members are equal, and there is a respect for sovereignty. On the other hand, China enjoys a seat as a permanent member of UN Security Council, which affords it some special privilege. So politically, the United Nations represents an ideal option for China in the international system. Economically, 40 years ago, when China launched, opened up, and reformed, it sought successfully to be integrated into the international economic and financial system, from IMF to World Bank to WTO, all these kind of things. So China's economic success has largely been supported by the current economic system. So that's why China has developed huge stake in the maintaining of the current in the system. And even on the security front, I think the after World War II, basically the war among the major powers has been avoided, partly because, maybe because of nuclear weapons, but also partly because the UN system, UN Security Council system. So in that sense, this has been quite successful. But on the other hand, I think China has also come to realize that there are visible defects with the current international order. On the political side, we think too much US dominance. From time to time, the United Nations was left aside. The US just go ahead either unilaterally or with a coalition of the willing, as we saw in the war on Iraq. And also, members are not really stable when it comes to the discussion and decision on the major international issues, because the US can easily mobilize its allies and to get a majority within the system. And more than that, from time to time, the sovereignty of small states, even middle states, are not fully respected because the strong powers have the will to do what they want. So we think the political order is good, but not ideal. There should be some improvement. On the economic front, even though China has been a major beneficiary, but still we think why is that this system is not providing enough public goods for the developing countries, either in terms of poverty alleviation or infrastructure development, or in terms of the representation of the developing emerging economies in the current international and financial system. And one example, of course, is the governor of World Bank has always been an American, while the governor of IMF has always been a European. So this kind of monopoly of leadership really is outdated, even though it may have some merit in the early days of its creation. On the security front, of course, largely because of the Cold War, the US chose to rely on its alliance system, rather than the United Nations to pursue its security goal. And this has remarkably undermined the role of the United Nations in maintaining peace and stability in the world. So there should be more commitment to the UN as a major platform for maintaining world peace and stability. And also, even more importantly, as international politics today in the 21st century is driven more and more by global governance, the current international order lags behind in providing adequate capacity in managing these issues. So this creates the incentive for China to seek the improvement of the current international order. So that is why in the last several years, the Chinese leaders have been calling, on the one hand, we should maintain, sustain the current international order. On the other hand, there should be some improvement with this order politically, economically, and on the security front. When we talk about China's impact on the international order, this is not just a rhetorical debate. Let's check with the facts, because you know facts speak for themselves. On the political side, I think China has been a very strong supporter of the UN system, and in which, as I already said, it not only shows the respect for sovereign states, but also basically most inclusive and multilateral political organization in the world. On the security front, China today is the largest contributor of troops to UN security, UN peacekeeping operations. And also, China has made big contribution in managing many regional challenges, from North Korea to Iran to Sudan, in collaboration with the United States and others. And also, in terms of global governance, climate change is one example, and there are also emerging areas in which China has been advocating actively for international coordination and cooperation with the UN framework, like in the cyber area and outer space area. So these are the facts showing how China is trying to promote the improvement of the international order. Now, I think sometimes you really need to put things in context, because the US approach to the current order was largely shaped by World War II and the Cold War period, which means basically the US approach to the current order is more along the line of political and security logic because of World War II, because of the Cold War. And also, the US is more inclined to deal with disputes through military means. That is the background of how we understand the US approach to the current order. And again, also the US, because of its dominant power, sometimes it can choose to evade multilateral institutions, economic or security, and to go unilaterally or with its own coalition of the willing. China, on the other hand, is a newcomer in the international system. Basically, we started to be integrated in the international system 40 years ago. It was almost finished 20 years ago when China finally joined the WTO. And China's approach to the international order is more shaped by globalization, by economic development. So this is why China's approach is characterized by one, development-oriented economic growth rather than emphasizing on political security logic. Two, as a developing country, we always emphasize on equality among all the member states. Thirdly, we prefer openness, free trade, and multilateralism because China, as I mentioned, is a major, major beneficiary of the current international order. Today, if you look at the international economic system, who is the revisionist state, China or the United States? It's just so self-evident. And finally, the difference China may make to the future international order is that China is more prone to the peaceful settlement of disputes, whether the US, because of its historical experiences during World War II and the Cold War, and also because of its power dominance, is more violent, prone in dealing with other countries. Not to say this unilateral sanctions, coercion, intimidation of others by political, economic, and military means. So that shows how, what kind of difference China may make to the current international order. So if that is the picture that we can envision in the future, it's hard to say this is an illiberal China, right? Because look at the values, what China is advocating for, and what is the China, what China is doing in improving and maintaining the current international order. So with that, I'll stop here. Thank you.
I want to have 4 points as my rebuttal. First, we did not hear from Professor Wu anything that is related to the points I've made regarding the characteristics of China's domestic institutions, because these are all about the Chinese government's perception of the West as an existential political threat. Let me just give you a quote. The standard stock phrase in Chinese official document. Even in the during the heyday of West's engagement with China, you see in Chinese official document, which says that the West has this abiding interest in destroying the Chinese Communist Party. The West always wants to fenghua, wants to split China, wants to westernize China. So in other words, we have to understand, and I hope Professor Wu help us understand, that why in official Chinese circles there's such deep hostility, distrust about the West. The only reason I can offer is that that's because the deep conflict, fundamental conflict in values between what the Chinese system represents and what the Western liberal system represents. The second point I want to make is Professor Wu wants us to believe that China is a stakeholder in the international system. But when you look at China, the evolution of China's attitude toward the international system, it's actually much more nuanced. It's more, it's evolutionary. I would say there were three components of the international system: the economic component, the political ideological component, and the security component. The economic component, without doubt, China is a beneficiary of that system. So China wants to have that system continue and continue to benefit from this. The political aspect of the system, it's not that China is a beneficiary of the international political, liberal political system. China views this as a threat. But for a while, because China makes trade-offs, China believed that it did not have to confront the Western liberal political system or the international political liberal system. China could live with it. And the security system for China for a while, for a long time, was seen as neutral. Because in the case of East Asia, at least the US the US-led securities alliance system enabled China to have a peaceful environment. But all of these changed around 2008. After 2008, or starting roughly around 2008, of course the economic system, that did not change much, but China began to take on the liberal international order. China viewed liberal international order as being weakened fundamentally by the financial crisis, and China had the confidence to shape this order in its own image. And in terms of security, you also see Chinese conduct changing around 2008, because China believed it now had the power to reshape the system. I heard from Professor Wu a lot of complaints about American hegemony, American supremacy. But when you look deeper into the sources of those complaints, you'll find that it is really a symptom of American envy. That is, China China hopes it would behave like a hegemon. When you look at instances where China can behave like America, it does behave like America, not the kind of America that a liberal would like to see, that is a rule-bound America. China would like to behave like America, unbound by international rules and laws, and all you need to do is to look at how China dealt with South Korea over the issue of the anti-missile system deployment. Last, I want to point out that Professor Wu gave us a long list of how China actively contributes to the UN system. I believe that some of that is indeed true, but China does so out of its national interest. But most importantly, on things that matter, China has not lived up to its to our expectations, and I want to point out one singular example. That is, China is a treaty party to UNCLOS, right? UN Convention on the Law of the Sea. And where it matters, whether China actually abides by the spirit, the letter of the treaty, in the case of the South China Sea, I think this is where China should put, should actually lead by example. But this is where China failed to lead by example.
Okay, Professor Wu, 5 minutes.
Only 5 minutes?
Only 5.
Let me respond to some of the questions or comments made by Min Xinpei. Why Chinese Communist Party views the West as an existential threat? I have spent too much time in Washington, D.C., attending debate like this. If you are in Washington, D.C. and attending this kind of debate and also go to hear to hearing, it's hard to not believe in this, right? U.S. does really want to change China's political system. So in China, there is always a debate whether the West wants to undermine and change China's political system. And I'm always trying to tell my colleagues, it's all politics, it's all rhetoric. They speak for themselves. Do not take this serious. Otherwise, every day you have you can find plenty of evidence about this kind of intention to change China's political system. So it's not something China created or paranoia. Basically, I mean, you just go everywhere to hear this kind of comment. Second, is China certified with the current political order, as I mentioned? If you are talking about the United Nations, yes, China is quite happy with that. So this is why China has been contributing more and more to the United Nations, financially, physically, and in other ways. So it's not fair to say, unfair to say that China wants to challenge the current political system. Only when countries began to challenge China's sovereignty and want to interfere in its internal affairs which in our understanding of the UN Charter is forbidden by that. Third, will China really want to behave like the US as hegemon in the future? I think the countries are different, not just because they have the same level of power, they will certainly behave similarly. Because just like two rich people, some rich people can be generous, kind, some rich people can be arrogant and selfish. Why? May have to do with the family background, the social environment in which they grew up. I think the difference between China is not only culturally, but also because US and China emerged as a major power under very different international circumstances. So that shapes China's behavior. Now, when people talk about, you know, we use economic means to coerce some of our neighbors, like South Korea. Well, I mean, using economic tools as a means of foreign policy has been the common case for every country, major country. And if you compare with the US, US would be more inclined, in addition to using economic tools, but also military tools. Now, which one would you prefer, economic tools or military tools? Countries have frictions. They have problems all the time. The problem is that you should use means that will not cause fundamental damage to this relationship. So if you take some economic sanctions, then, you know, these sanctions can be removed when relations are improved. However, if you launch an all-out military aggression of another sovereign state, that will create big problems. Look at what's happening in Iraq. I think China will be smart enough, wise enough, not to behave likewise. Finally, about China's internal politics, I think we need to put things in perspective. Today is the 40th anniversary of China's opening up and reform. I grew up in the 80s. I was fortunate, but I still have a memory about my childhood when we barely had not enough to eat in the 60s and the 70s. So if you look at today's China, I mean, standing in 1979, no people in China, maybe in the world, had ever imagined China would become a country like it is today. So you need to put things in perspective. Economic diversity. Today in China, over 80% of people are employed either in private sector or foreign direct investment. Only less than 20% work in the state enterprises. 40 years ago, 100% of them work for the state enterprises. What kind of economic change? And politically, today, you know, on the social media, you always have harsh debate on every issue in China, from social policy to economic policy, even to the politics. You always have the liberals and conservatives, to use the phrase to define it. So this wouldn't be possible without economic development and also with the access to the modern information technology. And I believe that in the long term, modernity is the way that will shape China. That means economic and technological progress will change people's lifestyle, change their way of thinking and behavior. As we have seen in China, especially the younger generation, my son's generation, we have seen remarkable level of individualism and preference for individual freedom, consumerism, and even environmentalism. So that is how, if you look at the society, that is the change the 40 years open up and reform have brought up to China. So think about China's future, look at the fundamentals, socio-economic growth, technological progress, and China's continuing engagement with the outside world. So my personal experience is that do not impose oversimplistic labeling on China, but rather take a more sophisticated, nuanced approach to China today and its future. And at the end of the day, I believe that today's international order is not as liberal as you believe. And the future international order in which China will have a larger role to play may not be as illiberal as you feel. Thank you.
We now have about 15 minutes for questions from the audience, and I'm going to remind you that the questions must be directly pertinent to the proposition that we are discussing, and please ask a very short question after identifying yourself. So who would like to start? Okay, we're going to go to the back right over there, this gentleman. Wait for the microphone. Go ahead, please.
I'm Aaron Baum, a research assistant at Georgetown University. And I'd like to hear sort of a more direct answer from Professor Wu to the point made by the other side about parallel Chinese institutions. Do you think those parallel institutions, if not meant to create competition with the existing order, what is the purpose of them?
Okay, hold on to that for a minute. We're going to take one more. We'll go to this side of the room. Over there in that corner. I'm giving our interns a tough challenge here. Thank you all very, very much.
Hello, my question is to Mingxing Pei.
Identify yourself,
please. My name
is
Yuan Fei, and I'm from American University. The question I have is about the international system, in the sense that is the current international system actually fair to everyone, given that the US dollar is a global reserve currency, and the quantitative easing obviously doesn't do too much good to the rest of the world.
Okay, we'll take those first. Professor Wu, parallel institutions like BRICS, Shanghai Cooperation Organization, AIIB, yes. What purposes do those serve?
There are different reasons with different institutions. I think for the Shanghai Cooperation Organization, it was created 3 months before the September 11th terrorist attack on the United States. This organization was created largely to deal with terrorism, extremism, and separatism in Central Asia. So that was a purpose, because before that, there were no available regional security mechanism dealing with this kind of unconventional security challenge that can make cooperation among related states possible. So I would view Shanghai Cooperation Organization as a supplement rather than a replacement of the current international institutions. On AIIB, there may be two reasons in my understanding. One, of course, is that China feels frustrated with the slow pace in the reform of IMF and World Bank, in which China believes it should enjoy a higher representation and voting rights, but simply because the dragging foot of the US Congress. So the reform package was delayed and delayed. So that somehow incentivized China to create the AIIB. Another reason, I think, has to do with the realization that the World Bank and Asian Development Bank are not funding, providing enough funding for the infrastructure development in Asia. So China would like to take this initiative. So I think for any new institutions, to borrow kind of academic sentence, is contested multilateralism. You create a parallel institution, and that will create the competition with the existing institutions. That's the reality. However, if you want to win the competition, you need to do a better job. Otherwise, you cannot win the competition. That is why when China created the AIIB, we not only copied the rules from World Bank, But also, we are trying to improve some of the rules and practices, make it more efficient in terms of meeting clients' needs, and also make it more attending to the needs for environmental protection. So for this competition, you can only do better. Otherwise, you will lose it. Okay.
Is the current world order fair to every nation? The simple answer is we don't know. Because what's fairness? How do we judge that something is fair and another thing is unfair? If you benefit, you say it's fair. If you don't benefit, you say it's not fair. Like the US, benefits a lot from free trade, but still with a lot of people in this country think that the current system is unfair to the US. But is the current system liberal? This is an empirical question, because when we define a current a system as liberal, we look at three characteristics. One is it open? Does the system include everybody? The UN system clearly is one. The World Trade Organization is one. IMF, World Bank, obviously inclusive. Second is that whether the system is rule-based. The current system is rule-based. And third is, does the current system embody some fundamental principles that we all believe to be the right principles? And the answer is yes. So the current system is definitely liberal, even though we don't know whether it's fair. It can be fair to everybody.
Okay, we're going to take two more questions here. Admiral McDevitt.
Hi, Michael McDevitt from CNA. Most of the discussion, I believe, has been focused, in my impression, has been focused on the first part of the proposition. Is China a liberal state?
Is your microphone on? We can't really hear you very well. Is it on? Okay, go ahead.
But most of the discussion has been focused on the first part of the proposition, i.e., is China in a liberal state? I'd like to hear a little bit more commentary from each of the panelists on the second part of the proposition. In other words, is China trying to reshape the international system into its own image?
Okay, we're going to take one more question. I'm going to take one from that side over here.
Stephen Dwyer from Baselina. I'm a research associate. This is mostly for Professor Wu. Something that you've talked about a lot is that there's a lot of discussion within the Chinese administration about the West really trying to break down the Communist Party. And that's, of course, important because in international order, respecting sovereign states is fundamental. You keep mentioning that you've gone to a lot of events, or it's very clear that the West talks about trying to break down the Communist Party. But I'd like to ask if you have any evidence, or if you can provide a little more facts or arguments behind that.
Okay.
In response to your question, I think I've laid out a long list because I started by saying that China has been trying, at least in the last 10 years, to construct a set of international institutions that will compete against the current institutions, and some of those institutions and initiatives do not embody the liberal values we have. Another instance is that China's enormous investments in illiberal regimes around the world. And the third is China has stepped up its game in trying to shape and influence Western norms and opinion about China, the so-called China option, the China story. Also China has been organizing events in Beijing. Some of you may not have heard of it. I did some research when I was preparing for this. I think last year, China convened the World Political Party Summit in Beijing. And what is China up to, convening political parties in Beijing? It also convened the first global conference on Marxism. There is something very serious going on in this regard.
Let me start by commenting on the nature of the international system, liberal or not. For any debate, you can easily call in a kind of black and white situation. But the reality may be more complicated than that. It can be some black, some white, not entirely either or all. So you can say for the current international order, maybe 60% of it is liberal, but 40% not so liberal. Or in economic area, you have more liberal features than in the security features. I think that is a more accurate attitude in defining the current international order. Now, where China shape the future order in its own image, I don't think China will shape the international order in its own image, but China will try to promote the improvement of international order according to its own national interests and also its preference, as every country does, right? Minxin just mentioned China supported the current international order because of China's national interests. Is this exceptional? Not every country is supported doing something out of their own national interests, or they just do it for the altruism, of course. So that's a good thing if you say the current international order serves your national interests. So I think China will gradually push the evolution of the international order to make it serve better China's national interests, and also to reflect some of its values. For example, equality, respect for sovereignty, right? Non-interference in the internal affairs. I think China has been very vocal in advocating for this kind of change. What about the, where are the evidences of, you know, the West of the US wants to change China's political system? Go and check every major speech made by the US presidents and high-ranking officials on China. I think they always start by suggesting that to change China's political system, political evolution, is the goal of US policy towards China. And the debate here in this country sometimes also centered around frustration that the US was not able to achieve its goal. So it's not something that China had this kind of paranoia, but rather that's very part of the US political culture. You need to change other countries, particularly China. Why this has not happened? Either because you cannot do it, this is a big power, not a small power. Even though you want to change Cuba, you want to bring down the regime in North Korea, you cannot do it. Or simply because you have other priorities in relation with China, so you need to pursue. So I think we all understand this kind of political competition. The real problem is that relations between China and the United States should not be too much hijacked by this kind of concern. We should put it in the context, as I alluded to in my earlier question in the last session. I think for China to manage this issue is to provide better social economic development to its people. That's a fundamental approach to maintain the political security at home.
Okay, we are now going to vote again.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
All of you, please make sure you turn on your clickers. So the green light needs to be on in order for your vote to be registered. We are once again voting on the proposition that China is an illiberal state seeking to reshape the international system in its own image. And I hope you will all vote. You can change your vote if you press A and decide you want B, or vice versa. You can change your vote. You can only vote once, so it doesn't matter how many times you press one of those letters. And I'm glad to see that the vast majority of you are voting for A or B, although we do have one outlier. Undecided is not an option here. You have to take a position. If you're in Washington, you can't be muddled. It's one or the other. But we really have had a terrific debate. I want to thank both of our speakers for making a really excellent case. We are going to lock down the votes now, and we have 67% in favor of the proposition and 31% no. So we have had even more people move in favor of the proposition. I hope we will continue to discuss this very important issue going forward. Please join me in thanking Professor Woosin Bourne-Paymanson.